Hi, I'm Hilary Acer, welcoming you to Raise the Line with Osmosis from Elsevier, an ongoing exploration about how to improve health and healthcare. Today, we continue our Next Gen Journey series, featuring conversations with learners in medical professions and early career professionals around the globe to get their fresh perspectives on education, medicine, and the future of healthcare. We have three leaders in the Student Osteopathic Medical Association with us today who are going to tell us about SOMA and its initiatives, discuss the role of students as advocates, and reflect on what being a medical student in the COVID era has been like. Joining me today are Lawson Parker, National Board of Directors Chairperson, Rebecca Wolf, National President, and Stephanie Koplitz, National Vice President and Speaker of the House. Thank you all so much for joining us today. So I'd like to start with learning a little bit about each of you and what led you to pursue becoming osteopathic physicians. Maybe Lawson, let's start with you. I understand you spent time on a religious mission in Mexico before entering Rocky Vista University College of Osteopathic Medicine. Tell us about that experience and why you ended up pursuing medicine.
Thanks, Hilary, and thank you for having us on the podcast. We're super excited to be here. So like you stated, I served a religious mission for 2 years in Mexico City. I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. A lot of young men and women go out and do that. I served for a period of 2 years, which is a long time when you're 18 years old. But during that time, I saw what I feel like are true health inequities, people who didn't have access, people who could not afford, people who were barely scraping by to live. And so during that time, I kind of set some career goals for myself of how can I give back to these people? You know, when I was there, these were the people who were feeding me, right? Who were giving what the little they had to help me survive while I was away from my family. I had always been kind of leaning towards a career in medicine, but because of that experience, I went back and did my undergrad in international business management, while also fulfilling the pre-med requisites with the hope of one day being able to create an organization or an opportunity where I can continuously give back to these people in the Hispanic countries who blessed me so much during my time, and so that I could hopefully give back a little bit of my time and talents to their lives. So it kind of helped me to create a focus, I guess. And a lot of what goes in osteopathic medicine, the philosophies, the things like that, help impact people greatly. You know, looking at a person as a body, mind, and spirit, and not just as a pathology. Those are the things that really resonated with me and my purpose as a future medical professional.
Thanks so much for sharing that background. It sounds like you've really connected to a bigger purpose, especially given that experience in Mexico. And maybe you can add on just a little bit about where you'd like to take your degree. You know, once you finish your medical degree, what are you hoping to do with that?
Yeah, so I'm actually matched into an ophthalmology residency. And so a big thing that I want to do is go out and do free cataract surgeries and help people who have been limited with their vision for years and years be able to see again. And that's a huge global mission for many ophthalmologists. And I know that because I speak Spanish, I had to learn Spanish while I was there. I have the unique opportunity to be able to give back to the specific group of people. So I look forward to doing that in the future.
That's amazing. And it's just inspiring to see how far medicine has come and that that's even an option for us today with the tools and technologies available. So I'm sure you'll impact many, many more people, and including those communities that seem to really support you during your mission as well. And Rebecca, I'd love to learn from you. So before you entered Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine, you were studying vocal performance. That seems like quite a change in direction. How did you land here?
Yeah, thank you so much for having us today. So I was always a very musical child. I played violin, cello, piano, mandolin, many instruments. And I actually did opera studies all through middle school and high school. And that's what I entered college in, was opera studies, vocal performance at Ohio University. I loved music and I was a psychology major in addition to that. But one of the core parts of me is that I'm a military kid. I was born in Germany and I lived on the West Coast. I lived on the East Coast, all over. I lived the life of moving every 1 to 2 years as my dad got restationed somewhere new. So in high school and college, something that was important to me was to give back to that community. Once I had like settled down in one spot, the military was so wonderful to us in that they paid for a lot of my college. And my dad ended up having a disability from the military. And so I spent a lot of time in the VA hospitals volunteering, particularly in neurology. And that was just something that I was interested in with my psych major. And as I spent every summer there, I became more and more interested in the science behind it and less of the psychology. And my undergrad had a medical school, an osteopathic medical school, actually. And I switched majors into a biology major with the idea of pursuing medicine instead. And I ended up graduating with a biology major and a psychology major. And then the vocal performance was something I did for fun. But it was just a way to give back to the community that I thought was really important to me. That was the community that raised me through so much of my childhood. And when I was volunteering, I found my purpose there. It was absolutely amazing just getting to see the veterans that like supported me and my family and be able to give back.
Thanks for sharing that, and thanks to your family for their service. And I'd love to know a couple of additional details here. So one, are you still performing in any way or still enjoying your musical talents?
Yeah, so that's how I got through match week is I would download new pieces of music and I would play them on the piano and the violin to try to ease my nerves a little bit. Soma is also a big karaoke group. We do karaoke at all of our conferences. And so my latest performance will be at our DC conference coming up in a few months.
Wow. Well, I don't know if I want to follow your act in karaoke, the vocal expert here. And then one other question. I mean, since you moved around so much, you have a favorite memory or a favorite location, growing up?
Yeah, one of the best places that I lived is I lived right outside of Boston, Massachusetts. And I found that like I need to be near the water. We lived in Idaho, which was landlocked, and we lived in Germany. But when we lived in Boston, we were near the water. It was very historic. There's just great infrastructure to be able to go see the city. And then after that, we lived in Ohio up near the water again. I live in Buffalo up near the water. So that's what I've learned is I need to be near water no matter where I am.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, I'm not sure if the science is as clear, but we're made of quite a bit of water, and I know that there's probably some connection in terms of just being in nature, experiencing that awe, right? And
Definitely.
kind of finding calm within that. So, thanks for sharing that. And Stephanie, you've worked in both medical and non-medical jobs before going to the Edward Via College of Osteopathic Medicine and also earned a master's degree in physiology. Tell us what was the most valuable experience you've had in the context of your medical education?
Yeah, thanks, Hillary. I decided to go to grad school out of undergrad because I experienced a lot of health challenges myself during undergrad and was in and out of the hospital quite frequently. So I knew I wasn't quite ready to go to med school yet, but it was always in the plan. So I went to grad school, and that gave me time to further delve into my passion in science, and physiology was something that I always loved. And my own experiences with my health struggles definitely led me to see the patient side. But my master's degree led me to doing some medical research, and that kind of allowed me to see more of the bench to bedside approach to medicine. So I had already seen it from the patient perspective, but then I got to see it kind of behind the scenes. And then I worked in several different avenues of careers before. I worked as a home health provider, and in that job, I got to see not only from the patient's perspective, but also from the caregiver's perspective, and how difficult it can be, not just on the individual who has the illness or the injury, but also on, their spouse, their children, everyone else in the family, and how challenging it can be to just make it to a medical appointment. I remember there were days when just packing all of the medical equipment that we needed into the car to get us on time to an appointment, no matter how much time I budgeted to make sure we were there on time, it was, could always still be a little bit of a struggle. Just seeing different perspectives of healthcare from being the patient myself to seeing how it affects the patient to how it affects the relationship with the spouse and the other loved ones. I think that that's probably what's influenced me the most. And applies to my career because it's really important to me that when I'm treating a patient, that I'm, caring for that patient, obviously, but also when we send them home, their families are the ones that are their primary caregivers when that role like moves away from me. So I think just seeing different aspects of healthcare and the holistic approach of it, and it's never just an illness or just an individual person in it. It has a whole effects on every aspect of their lives.
That's a really important insight. And first of all, I'm sorry to hear that you had experienced those health issues. I hope your health has improved now, and you're clearly, doing a lot to give back given that experience that you've had. We also talk a lot about kind of the community influence of a patient and the need to be really empathetic towards not just the patient, but the families and the caregivers, right? Whether that's a spouse or a sibling or whoever may be stepping in. And so I'm just curious if there's any advice you'd give to healthcare workers to be more empathetic or to keep that in mind when they are maybe handing off the baton to the family as they continue their care at home.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, there's a lot that we are trained on as far as communication and empathy. We always want to kind of get down at the patient's level. We don't want to stand and talk down to them just from a, a physical point. And I think physical connection always helps. So, I like to place my hand on their leg, or wherever is comfortable, just so that they know that I'm listening and connect with them. But as far as talking with the family and caregivers, initially, when I am, kind of moving towards discharge or the end of my encounters, I always first address the patient and ask them if they have any questions, because, this is, you don't ever want to dismiss the patient. This is their situation, primarily, but let's not discredit that, we all have these communities that surround us. So something that's important to me is once I've given the patient the space to ask any questions and voice any concerns or anything with me, I like to then turn to the caregivers or whoever is there and say, "Hey, do you have any questions about your dad's care or what things are going to look like moving forward?" And I think it goes a long way too if you're going to discharge them with different medications or equipment, whether it be, home oxygen or wheelchairs, or, maybe they need to give insulin injections or something like that for the first time, to not only show the patient, but also show the caregiver how to use the equipment and what to look out for. So I think giving it the time for the patient to have questions, but also giving it to the family and making those two separate things. You never want to turn straight to the caregiver and discredit the patient. So give them that time first, and then also recognize the caregivers, the spouses, the loved ones who also contribute to this patient's health and well-being.
That's great advice, and something that, I'd love to see Osmosis expand educational videos on at some point. You all are, clearly in your positions for good reasons, given your backgrounds, your connection to kind of your personal purpose here within medicine. But you also all lead the SOMA organization, and I'd love to dig into that more. So, Rebecca, you're currently serving as the national president. Can you share a little bit about the scope of the organization and how you define its mission?
Yeah, of course. So SOMA is the next generation of osteopathic student leaders. We have a pre-medical branch to recruit the students that are in the pre-health sciences interested to coming into medical school, as well as an alumni organization, the members that were SOMA members, or we say SOMA lovers, as SOMA is only 50 odd years old, that physicians in practice might not have had the chance to be in SOMA at the time. So we have the alumni, the pre-health, and then the medical student members. And it's a group of over 20,000 osteopathic medical students, the largest organized group of osteopathic medical students, actually. And the mission is to prepare osteopathic leaders and advocates. That's SOMA's main goal, is it's an advocacy organization that is membership driven. We have a direct affiliation with the American Osteopathic Association, and that's how we advance the interests and viewpoints of medical students. And it allows us to collaborate with organizations such as yours and talk about osteopathic medicine and advocacy opportunities and really advance medicine in the greater healthcare community as a whole. It's a great opportunity, and it allows students to work together to really enact positive change.
I know we'll get into the advocacy work in a little bit, but I'm really keen on the professional development as well. So, Lawson, I understand that before you were the chair, you had led the organization's professional development initiatives. Tell us about the dimension of SOMA's work.
Yeah, so like Rebecca stated, we're trying to prepare and educate osteopathic leaders of, for tomorrow, right? Professional development fits directly in with that point of our mission statement. What's difficult with professional development and medical students is that everyone is pursuing different specialties. And so what I was doing to prepare my residency application was different than what Rebecca was doing, and it was different than what Stephanie was doing. So we really tried to focus on making sure we were touching the common points that everyone was going to use, right? CV workshops, looking at residency applications, interview skills. Those are the things that are common amongst every medical student. And then more than that, I wanted to try to talk about like learning how to frame yourself. When we're going into interviews, when we're writing our residency application, we need to focus on our biggest strengths, and measure those strengths to others, right? So in my business degree background, I learned a lot about using numbers in your resume, right? And how to talk about those certain skills. And so we tried to apply those things to medical students and explain that you need to measure your success. Everything you're doing out there is important. And no matter what your role in the volunteer project or your role in the research project, make sure you are putting that on your CV and you're writing a little something about it so that you can talk about it in the future. So we really tried to define professional development as setting yourself up for success tomorrow. And I think we did a good job through a lot of the different initiatives we had planned.
It sounds like your business background helped quite a bit in that role, but I've also served in a number of kind of HR recruiting people organizations and roles, and we talk a lot about that too. How do you tell the story of your previous experience and your previous work, and how do you also tell the story with data? So those are really important tips to take forward. And Stephanie, advocacy is such a big piece of what SOMA does today. Can you give us some examples of those initiatives and also explain why it's important for medical students to be involved in advocacy early on?
Yeah, absolutely, Hillary. So the unique thing about SOMA is that we are the only student organization that has a direct line to present resolutions to the American Osteopathic Association's House of Delegates. So this is kind of our direct avenue to, bring our resolutions and whatever our members are interested in straight to the American Osteopathic Association as one of our stakeholders and big players in medicine. And some of the things that we've done recently, it's always changing because as a membership-driven organization, it's whatever our members bring to us, that's what we're going to work on at that time. But some of our recent successes include continuing of THC GME funding for residency programs, and that is really important because it brings more healthcare to rural areas that don't have as much access to care. So that's always a really important issue for us. Other important issues are surrounding mental health and physician burnout. We recently had a lot of success with the Lorna Breen Healthcare Provider Act. And this was something that, a lot of physicians unfortunately die by suicide. And it's a huge issue these days, especially coming out of the pandemic. So that's a huge area of focus for us is mental health and burnout. And the Lorna Breen Act has actually now been passed into law. So that was a huge advocacy win for us. But we also take on other issues, such as recently we worked on an issue with over-the-counter contraceptives and bringing those. And now, you may have seen that you can now buy oral contraceptives on Amazon. And, pretty soon they're going to be coming into their local pharmacies. So we do all sorts of different advocacy issues. It really comes down to what our members bring to us at the time. And I think it's really important that students get involved in advocacy because, no matter what, in our roles as physicians, we're advocates. Whether you know it at the time or not, our job every day is to advocate for our patients. I advocate for my patients when, I'm trying to get them the specialist care that they need and referring them to other providers. We're advocating when we, try and talk to them about diet and exercise and changing things in their lifestyle that may improve their lives. So every day we all function as advocates and we make up a large population of physicians. Older physicians are moving towards retirement, and we are the new generation. And so it's important that we take on these roles because our patients don't always have access to be able to have that voice that we have. And so it's important that we use the voice and the privilege that we've been awarded with our careers to advocate for them on their behalf.
Thanks for sharing those examples. You mentioned something that I know is top of mind for a lot of students, residents, clinicians today, and that's burnout. And you also mentioned that it's worsened during the pandemic. We're seeing, you know, shortages in the healthcare workforce. We're seeing longer hours. We're seeing just a need for more care. And so you all have had a pretty unusual experience of dealing with a pandemic as medical students. What was the impact on your education and your perspective about pursuing a healthcare career? Maybe Lawson, we can start with you.
Yeah, so we all started our first year kind of during a pandemic year. Medical school is as hard as it is normally without extra rules, extra regulations. But starting during that time, it was extremely hard. I was felt very isolated from the rest of my class. And so you'd go in and you would struggle with a topic or you'd struggle with a test, and then you didn't have a group of people going through that shared experience to bounce that off. And so you felt even more like a failure, I guess. And I struggled, you know, for probably the first time in my life, I felt feelings of depression and anxiety that I hadn't dealt with ever in the past. And so the pandemic really put me through kind of a melting pot of emotion that I had never had before. And I had to learn how to take care of myself and my mental health through that time. And it got a whole lot better once we were able to congregate more, get to know our classmates, and really have a tribe of people that you were working towards a common goal with. I think it was also hard to, for me being such a hands-on learner, to all of a sudden only be learning through online lectures and then have very minimal opportunities to go do hands-on labs on campus. So that was also tough. As far as pursuing healthcare as a career, it didn't change my mind about that. But I do think that it had an impact on the more upperclassmen who were going through that time period because they really saw physicians burning out. And you could see the match kind of shifted a little bit with people trying to pursue specialties that had lower rates of burnout during that time period. And it's kind of stabilized more with our year. But there was definitely a learning experience for everyone during the pandemic. And, you know, fingers crossed, we don't have to do that again.
Yeah, lots of learnings during that big shift in educational settings and just the state of the world overall. Rebecca, what would you add to that? And maybe in particular, how did SOMA support students during COVID?
Yeah, I mean, like Lawson said, my first year of medical school was completely on Zoom. We didn't have any opportunities to go into campus outside the last week of each semester was our lab week. And so those feelings of inadequacy, you're in an echo chamber of your own mind without other people to interact with. And I think that's something that SOMA tried to combat is we're grouped into regions. There's five regions. And within those five regions, it's your little SOMA pod. All the med schools in that little pod are together. And there was regular meetings. SOMA put out content on physician burnout. They had the We Are the Vaccine campaigns. They had vaccine training seminars. It was important to try to find ways to get medical students to connect, especially first-year medical students, in a situation where connection was incredibly limited. And the way that they had to do that was through Zoom. And the last thing anybody wants is more Zoom when you're on school all day for Zoom. So figuring out ways to connect in socially distant ways, whether it be working out together, as SOMA has an OPP director that Lawson oversees osteopathic principles and practice, and part of that is wellness. So we are participants in Charity Mile, and everybody sends in pictures of them walking their dogs, or in Stephanie's case, walking her baby. Those were things that we did during the pandemic that stuck around. Everybody does Charity Miles together. There's yoga together. There's burnout talks together. And I think finding ways to connect together, even though we were apart, was very important to SOMA at that time.
The community aspect, even though remote, sounds like it was quite strong and really a pillar of maybe SOMA's membership strength, that if you were part of this group, you really had access to a network that could support you and uplift you during that time. So I love hearing in particular about the wellness events. I also teach yoga. So maybe at some point we can all do a wellness event together. But Stephanie, I'd love to get your take on COVID. And also, as Rebecca just noted, you actually had a baby during medical school, which seems like quite an extra task. I'm guessing your time management skills have become more important than ever.
Absolutely, Hillary. And, you know, it's really interesting to me to reflect back on this because I almost feel that starting med school in a pandemic prepared me to be a new mother and to be a first-time mom during medical school because, like everyone's kind of highlighted, the pandemic and not just for medical students, but for everyone was very isolating. And so the skills that I had to learn during my first year was, we all worked hard. No one got to med school without working hard. But, once we got here, that's when the discipline had to kick in. We moved from things like mandatory attendance to lectures where we would spend, 8+ hours a day all together working together to, achieve this common goal of our degrees. But suddenly we were now alone on our couches. And so it takes a lot more discipline, than I ever, would have expected. I'd always been a hard worker, but, when you're tired and when you're exhausted and you still have two more lectures to get through, that's when the discipline kicks in. And, for me, it was kind of the same thing being a new mom. I actually took my board licensing exams postpartum with my new baby. And of course, as a first-time mom, I had no idea what I was doing on that front. And you're exhausted as a mom all the time. She's 9 months old and I'm still exhausted. I don't know if that really ever changes. But you find ways that, time management is, yes, that's important, but also just discipline and knowing that why you're doing this and who you're doing this for. And ultimately, like, I'd honestly say maybe things even got easier for me because suddenly I wasn't having to remind myself of my why. Because every time I woke up in the middle of the night, or when I looked down at the background of my phone, I could see my why right there, and it was my daughter and everyone that's going to be in her generation and making a healthier tomorrow for her. So yes, it's time management, but I think that sometimes we always say that you can't pour from an empty cup. Sometimes you have to put a little bit more on that plate. And in my case, it was a lot to fill that cup up. And, now my cup's overflowing and I'm exhausted, but I feel like I'm thriving and happier than ever. And I just think that that makes everything a lot easier if you're going in with joy. And I would take the sleepless nights for all of the joy every day of the week.
Well, congratulations, Stephanie, and certainly impressive that you're balancing all of that. And I do also want to recognize Lawson and Rebecca. You've got your own dogs to take care of as well. So probably a slightly maybe less intense time management requirement there, but Snoop and Finn have probably been important for your well-being too. Anything you want to speak to on being a dog parent?
I will say having a dog through medical school was awesome. Definitely was the one of the reasons that got me outside, got me in the sun. Snoop has definitely earned his honorary doctor of osteopathic medicine degree, so I will be presenting that to him at graduation.
I love that.
I am the exact same way, because my whole first year was on Zoom. Finn attended all of my Zoom lectures. So at White Coat in second year, I got Finn a white coat. And since my last name is Woof, he is Dr. Woof. And we're all going to be DOs. So he has his DOG degree. And I'm really excited to present that to him at graduation.
Oh my goodness, I'm so glad I followed up with that because I had no idea that you had prepared so many of these puns. I think we're going to need to create more memes and maybe some things to circulate so other folks can know about these. But yeah, the DOG and Dr. Wolf and doctor's degrees are bringing a lot of joy. So thanks for sharing that. I'm wondering how the experience of being in these leadership positions has influenced you in terms of building confidence or in shaping what roles you see yourself playing in your careers. I know it's a bit of a shift, but Lawson, tell us a little bit about your experience in leadership and yeah, where you see this taking you.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and great to reflect on. One quote that comes to my mind is, "You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with." And I've been lucky enough to spend a lot of time with about 20 other leaders who are extremely hardworking, extremely passionate, and are just totally different than who I am. I've spent a lot of time with Stephanie and Rebecca, and I can tell you that I have grown so much by just being around these leaders, these student leaders. And as I felt myself grow, I felt my confidence grow in how I can also be a leader and be an advocate in my future specialty. So personally, after going through this experience of leadership with Soma, I can't imagine my career without being a leader, without being an advocate for my, colleagues, my patients, myself. And those are skills and things that I've had to develop during this time. And so I'm grateful for my time with Soma and grateful for all the people that I've been able to learn from during this the past couple of years.
Thanks for that. And what a nice compliment to Stephanie and Rebecca. It sounds like you all have really elevated each other and learned a lot from each other. Stephanie, what are your thoughts on leadership?
You know, the thing about leadership for me, it's kind of similar to what I was saying with advocacy. And as physicians, we have this privilege that we've been given to care for people in some of the most difficult times of their lives. And so we're automatically placed into a leadership role, whether we desire to be or not. But every single physician is in this leadership role in our healthcare system. And you know, I've learned so much as a leader over the years. I did a lot of leadership in undergrad, but you know, it was never something that I really thought that would be specifically part of my career. Like I never necessarily sought it out. It just seemed to be something that was repeated throughout my story. And so, you know, as I kept going through leadership, I realized that if something keeps coming up in your story, it might be there for a reason, and it might be something that you should continue to pursue. And so I think it's important for me that, you know, in my role as in healthcare, that yes, it's helped me build confidence as a leader, but I've also worked with, you know, not only like Lawson saying, our tight-knit group on our board of trustees and our board of directors, but we also, you know, start mentoring young student leaders as their first years at the individual campus level. And so we've all worked with a variety of different leadership styles and different, you know, areas of leadership where maybe they're first starting out and this is their first role, or maybe they're very seasoned and they've been doing this for a long time. And so I think that, you know, directly translates to us working in these healthcare systems, because since we're automatically in these leadership roles, you know, we work with different staff members, whether it be our nursing staff, our therapy staff, or other medical staff, as far as specialists, especially as internal medicine. You know, we have the cardiologist and the nephrologist, and we're trying to bring the whole team together. And so I think it definitely translates to, you know, being able to work with different leadership styles and kind of pivoting on the moment's notice to what leadership style best fits the people that you're working with. And same with the patients. We work with all different populations, and, you know, they might need guidance and leadership from a different direction. So I think it's very applicable, and I think it's going to, you know, do dividends for our careers and just for patient care overall. And that, you know, that's all we ever wanted, was to do our very best for all of our patients. That's all we can ask for.
Yeah. And it also sounds like you've really honed in on being able to customize your leadership style or approach based on who you're working with, right? Whether it's your patients or your fellow colleagues or other health professionals that you may be partnering with in the hospital. So I think that's another key takeaway for me. And Rebecca, what about you?
So I think for me, leadership and advocacy both are huge words that can be very daunting. And when I came into medical school as a first year, I don't think if I was looking back and saying, oh, I'm going to be, you know, the president of this large advocacy organization, that was never something I envisioned or dreamed of, because advocacy is kind of a scary word. You don't know how to do it. And I think when I learned that advocacy is doing the most good for the most people, and leadership is how you do that, it made a lot of sense. And that's what circles how I lead. And I think that a year ago now, when I became national president and I sat there and I said, I don't know how I'm going to do this, I looked beside me and I saw Steph on one side and Lawson on the other. And that's how we do this. We do it together. And that's what our leadership perspective and all three of us is. It's how we lead something together. We lead our organization. We lead the other medical students. We lead the pre-meds. And we make the next generation of leaders that'll follow behind us, because our leadership story isn't what we make, it's what we leave behind. And I think that's really important to all of us, is knowing that we created something really great this year, but we're excited even more about the leaders that we raised, who will continue to create something great. And I'm excited to see where we go after this. I know that both of them will continue to create great things wherever they go. But I think that's what's my important thought on leadership. It's not what you do in your term, it's what you leave behind.
What great thoughts on leadership, and what an impressive team you all have brought together. And I would love to know, you know, what is next for you? So we just recently finished the match season, and I want to congratulate you all on matching. Where are you doing your residency, and what specialties do you plan to pursue next? Maybe we'll start with Lawson once again, and then Stephanie, and then close with you, Rebecca.
Yes, so I am super excited to have matched into ophthalmology. I'm going to Corwell Health East, which is a hospital system just outside of Detroit, Michigan.
And I am over the moon to say that I matched in internal medicine and I'm moving to Oxford, Mississippi.
Like Stephanie, I also matched in internal medicine and I'm going to Summa Health Neomed in Akron, Ohio. My sister is actually a second year OB resident at that hospital, so it'll be great to be reunited once I get there.
That's wonderful that you'll get to spend some more time with her and hopefully learn from her and maybe get connected to other folks in that area as you move. So, you all have such bright futures ahead, and it's been such a pleasure speaking with you and hearing about both Soma, but also your personal journeys into osteopathic medicine. And I can certainly say that I have a lot of faith in the next generation of doctors after this conversation, and I really look forward to following your journey. So thank you, Lawson, Stephanie, Rebecca, for being with us today, and best of luck to you as you head into residency.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us, Hillary.
And with that, I'm Hillary Acer. Thanks for checking out today's show. Remember to do your part to raise the line and strengthen the healthcare system. We're all in this together.
If you like this podcast, please share it on your social channels. You can also subscribe to the series and check out all of our episodes at osmosis.org/raisethelinepodcast.